Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a clear set of directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple actions. These actions are contained in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. It's the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of AA's simple actions. I'll now read the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and to help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the stuff discussed tonight. This evening, we are discussing step one, right at the beginning, and I will read the first paragraph on page, let's see here. This is going to be in the page XXVI, in the beginning of your big book. In step one, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. The physician who, at our request, gave us this letter has been kind enough to enlarge upon his views in another statement which follows. In this statement, he confirms what we who have suffered alcoholic torture must believe, that the body of the alcoholic is quite as abnormal as his mind. It did not satisfy us to be told that we could not control our drinking just because we were maladjusted to life, that we were in full flight from reality, or were outright mental defectives. These things were true to some extent, in fact, to a considerable extent with some of us, but we are sure that our bodies were sickened as well. In our belief, any picture of the alcoholic which leaves out this physical factor is incomplete. The doctor's theory that we have an allergy to alcohol interests us. As laymen, our opinion as to its soundness may, of course, mean little, but as ex-problem drinkers, we can say that this explanation makes good sense. It explains many things for which we cannot otherwise account. And we're reading from the doctor's opinion. I've read through that. Thank you.
Yeah. Hey, I'm Evan. I'm an alcoholic. Can everybody hear me all right from this distance? A little bit, just. All right, yeah. The microphone, man, that's a new one. This kind of, this stood out to me. It was kind of fun preparing for this, because normally when I read through chapters, you know, I skip over things, or certain things don't stand out to me quite as much. And so this was nice. You know, of course, this is where we first start talking about the allergy. And, you know, in my experience, looking back now, having a little clarity and the ability to be honest with myself, and even understanding that this is a progressive disease, I could see from the beginning how really one drink led me into another into another. I think from the first time I experienced alcohol, you know, from whenever I was about 19, first time I got into college, when I really had access to as much as I wanted. My sole purpose was just to get drunk, you know? And I didn't understand that was not normal, and that at some stage, you know, as we mature in life, you know, normal drinkers kind of grow out of that, you know? They get sick of having to wake up hungover and worrying about what they did and said the night before. And I like this piece where it suggests that I must believe this You know, I have to believe that my body is quite as abnormal as my mind. And, you know, when I first came in here, I thought this allergy piece was kind of a cop-out, you know? Never mind that it's in the doctor's opinion and it's kind of, you know, it's medical, these guys with PhDs, you know, who struggled for years. And I don't know a lot of the history outside of the big book, but you know, before this, you know, my understanding is we were all just kind of thrown in the nut ward, you know, to dry out. And so I have to believe that there's this struggle, and they finally figured out that our bodies just seem to be different, that it's an allergy. And I, you know, I'm a smart guy, so I had to look up allergy. I like to look up words. And in the dictionary that I looked it up, it's just an abnormal reaction of the body to a previously encountered allergen introduced by inhalation, injection, or ingestion, etc. And so it's just suggesting that my body reacts differently to alcohol than the normal drinker would. And you know, it suggests that any picture of an alcoholic would... that leaves out this physical factor is incomplete. And if you leave out the body piece, then all I'm really looking at is, why can't I stop? You know, it's just like, wow, you know, why can't I just try harder, you know? And what is that really telling me is that I'm just left with, once again, you know, am I maladjusted to life? Am I just not tuned in right, you know? I don't like those, you know. It's not very effective to point your finger at me and tell me there's something wrong with you, you know, and whatever, you know. Why don't you control yourself a little better? Because I don't want to. I don't know. I like the effect produced by getting sloppy drunk, you know. It helps me to forget myself. It helps me to feel comfortable in my skin. So, you know, it just really, it took me a while for that to sink in that, okay, man, this is really a part of who I am, that it's okay to accept the fact that my body's just different. It reacts differently to the substance. And real quick, you know, I after 100 times of reading it, you know, I love the fact it describes exactly what I was just saying. As layman, our opinion as to its soundness, of course, means little. You know, to me, my opinion means everything. So here I am, I'm arguing with these PhDs and about, you know, whatever, what's going on with me, because who of course would know me better than me? So I don't know, I could just see this in the way my body reacts in my experience with alcohol, and I've grown to accept this as a part of my, you know, step one problem. I'll pass to you.
Thanks, Evan.
Yeah.
I'm Larry. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Larry.
Hear me all right? It used to take a lot of booze to get me to get up in front of a group of people with a microphone in my
yeah.
I was quite introverted when I got here, but that seems to have left me, like the compulsion to drink. It's kind of strange. When I tell people I was an introvert at one time, they look at me and they go, "You can't shut your mouth for 5 minutes. How could you be an introvert?" You know, I can't think of a better description of who I am than that line that Catherine read earlier. I am maladjusted to life. I am in full flight from reality. And I am an outright mental defective. But in addition to that, my body is different. And that's what they're talking about here. I remember coming into AA and thinking, I'm just mentally screwed up. I'm psychotic, I'm insane, I'm nuts. I didn't have a problem buying that idea. But when they begin to talk about this idea of an allergy, I was the layman that kind of questioned that allergy, you know. And Evan stole some of my thunder by pulling out the definition. I was going to do that too. I'm really upset you took that from me.
Yeah.
But this abnormal reaction, what's funny is Evan's definition was much more thorough than the one I've read today. His thorough talked about inhalation and injection in addition to ingestion.
Covering, you know, the bases.
And, you know, there's probably at one time I would have tried all those methods.
Yeah.
You know, not just oral ingestion, but inhalation and injection. Anyway. You know, what separates me from what they call, they'll talk about in the big book, a temperate drinker, the person that can go to the bar and have a drink or two and go home. I always like to use my mother as an example. She can have a glass of wine with dinner and she won't even finish the whole glass, has no problem taking the half and dumping it in the sink after dinner's over. You know, that totally just, even as a sober alcoholic, that bothers me today. But she's what we would call a temperate drinker or a normal drinker. I, on the other hand, am an alcoholic. So when I begin to ingest alcohol, when I take it into my system, my body reacts in a totally different way. It has an allergic reaction, which literally causes me to crave more. Now, there's definitely a mental component there, too, but that's a separate issue. You can look just at the physical component, and that was new information to me when I got here, that there was a real physical component here, that my body is different than a normal drinker. And, you know, when I think of allergy, I think of, you know, someone that eats strawberries and all of a sudden their throat swells up and they can't breathe, or they eat peanuts and they break out in hives and things like that. None of that ever happened to me when I drank alcohol, but I do clearly remember at some point in time, it didn't take much, a half a beer, a shot of whiskey, and I craved more. And even in light of my mental thought that, hey, I've got to be home by 8 o'clock tonight because I got to go to work tomorrow, that physical craving would override that mental thought and compel me to continue drinking well beyond when I had planned to stop. And that's when I think I'd cross the line from being a normal drinker, if I ever was one, to an alcoholic. Many times, I can look back through my drinking history and see the progression, how it got worse, but many times I can look back and see where I had every intention of maybe just having one or two, or had every intention of going into the bar and not having any. But the minute that I took just a little bit, just a good couple of swallows, that warm sensation, that fuzzy glow that we all talk about, that was the beginning of the craving for me. And it would compel me to drink until either, one, I ran out of money, two, got kicked out of the bar and didn't have any more access. I mean, it took some physical event when I was in the later stages of my drinking to get me to stop. So I can relate to the allergy. And as it says here, it makes sense to us for things that we otherwise could not account for. You know, I didn't understand. I spent a lot of time before I got here trying to moderate, trying to control, trying to figure out why is it that when I know I don't want to drink too much or I don't want to drink at all, I feel compelled to do so anyways. You know, what is it about this powerlessness? Why do I have this thing? And, you know, at this point in time, it really doesn't matter why I'm powerless, just the fact that I am and I'm alcoholic and that I have this physical allergy to alcohol. So today I know that the minute that I take any alcohol into my system whatsoever, my body's going to react differently and it's going to crave it. And that's really one of the primary things that makes me an alcoholic. Thanks.
Thank you, guys. We're going to move right along in the doctor's opinion to page XXVII28. We believe, and so suggested a few years ago, that the action of alcohol on these chronic alcoholics is a manifestation of an allergy, that the phenomenon of craving is limited to this class and never occurs in the average sober drinker. These allergic types can never safely use alcohol in any form at all, and once having formed the habit and found they cannot break it, once having lost their self-confidence, their reliance upon things human, their problems pile up on them and become astonishingly difficult to solve.
Thanks. Yeah, so here again, you know, we have the first mention of the phenomenon of craving. And I like, you know, one time if I could just steal someone else's stuff. There's a speaker, and I can't remember exactly who it is, who kind of alluded to the fact that, you know, craving, that's another idea, you know, that I would come in here and fight. You know, I just thought every drink was my idea. I thought drink 20 was my idea, that was what I set out to do. I like getting drunk, and the idea, you know, is that just like Larry suggested, it would take something physical to remove me away from drinking for me to be able to stop. And then I would properly use that as evidence as to, look, I could stop. stop whenever I want. And towards the end of my drinking, that included a lot of passing out on the couch. But, you know, then the craving part is once that's taken away from me, you know, I don't realize I'm craving drink 19 until I can't get my hands on drink 19. And then I'm irritable, restless, and discontent, man. I'm just flat out pissed. And, you know, I'm going to probably throw a big drunk temper tantrum wherever I'm at and cause a lot of trouble. And, you know, just suggest that I can never safely use alcohol at any form at all, you know. And I don't know. I haven't had the experience where, and I imagine allergies exist to different extents in each of our bodies, just like any allergy would. But I just know that I will not take that first drink. You know, and I have the ability to, and I believe that's the restoration of sanity part, is I just will not, because I know what's going to come after that. And then, you know, the bigger piece, I guess, is having formed a habit that they cannot break. You know, towards the end of my drinking, a week of sobriety was more like 3 days to me. And the delusion in my mind was, well, I made it a whole week, you know, and it's Thursday, you know, and it's like Thursday is just kind of part of my weekend now. And then Friday is just, you know, that's absolutely just second Saturday. And so I'm in this thing, and I would hand over my power to this. I would just look for any way to get out of this. And a lot of that looks like the gym. Maybe if I just work out constantly and you know, I'll feel healthier and I won't want to tear that apart, so that'll help me control. Or maybe all those self-help books, you know, teach me how to be happier, and then I won't want to drink all this away. And or, you know, the psychologist, you know, I was seeing one of those, whichever one gives you the drugs, I can never remember. And you guys can figure that out with better memories than I have. So that tells me, you know, none of that stuff ever worked. None of that stuff ever seemed to keep me away from that first drink, which once again sets off my allergy and leaves me, you know, just moving on into oblivion. And I can tell you, you know, by the end of my drinking, nothing human could stop me from drinking. You know, I'd lost my self-confidence, which, because time and time again, here I am, I'm failing myself and all these lofty goals and ways of living that I've decided I'm going to, you know, conquer it this way and just be happy. I really didn't think drinking was a problem. I just needed to be happy, and then I could get away from tripping off this allergy that I didn't know I had. And when I lose that self-confidence, that just kind of compounds the problem. Because now I see I'm failing myself just, you know, one more time. And now I'm just, oh, what a loser I am. And now I'm wrapped up in my self-pity and I have to drink to forget that. And just drinking doesn't work anymore. I'm setting off that allergy. And then I'm just drunk with my woes and my pities once again. So I'm gonna go ahead and pass on that, man.
Thanks, so.
Yeah, thank you.
I'm thinking about the line that follows the paragraph we just read about frothy emotional appeal. You know, I got a lot of that. You know, I got a lot of, what's wrong with you? Why can't you just, you know, chill out tonight? Why can't you just relax? What's the problem? I can remember my wife at the time, when I was married before I came in the program, saying, you know, when we go over to somebody's house for a barbecue, you can't just have a beer and relax like everybody else. You get stinking drunk. And, you know, you're making a fool out of yourself. You're embarrassing me. What is wrong with you? And the truth is, I had no idea. Because there was many times I had every intention when I went somewhere with the family. I can remember distinctly one time saying, okay, honey, you know what? You can drink tonight. I might have a beer. And we've got kids. You know, we've got kids. I'm going to drive home. I can remember getting in the car, kids in the back seat, wife in the passenger seat, driving maybe 5 minutes down the road before I'm realizing I'm seeing not a two-lane highway, but like a 10-lane highway. Yeah. And realizing I'm drunk. I've done it again, you know? Over and over, I would do that. It would repeat itself over and over again, and that's when I began to lose that self-confidence. You know, I was raised to believe that, you know, just work hard at something, keep trying, and you'll finally get it. If you just put in enough effort. I put a lot of damn effort into controlling my drinking. And I never was able to muster the proper strength. You know, that was a huge relief to me when I got here to AA to hear that, hey, when it comes to drinking, you're never going to have enough human willpower. You know, that this power must come from something greater than you, a higher power. And although I did struggle with the higher power issue, I was glad to know that it wasn't just because I was a weak willy-nilly, and that all of you all were just like me, and that when you walked into a situation and had a few beers, you lost control, because that's what I experienced time and time again. And I can remember going through that period of time towards the end of my drinking, the last couple of years, of really trying to control it, trying all kinds of different ways, everything they talk about in the book, changing brand, changing environment, beer, liquor, all those things, all those ways that we try. But as long as whatever I was drinking had alcohol in it, whether I was drinking grain alcohol or some fruity wine cooler that my wife handed me, I lost control. I lost control. And then I was going to drink everything in the house. And again, it all goes back to this allergy, this phenomenon of craving. I relate totally to their problems pile up on them and become astonishingly difficult to solve. That's really what drove me into AA. It wasn't, you know, I knew I couldn't control my drinking. I could tell there was a problem there. But if you ask me when I got here, well, what's the real problem, Larry? Well, I can't find a job. Everybody's a jerk at work. Every place I've worked, they're all jerks. You know, my wife's not treating me right. My kids don't respect me. You know, I could give you a litany of problems that I had and things that were wrong with the world. And no matter how much I tried to, you know, we get in our heads and try to manage these things and think these things through. No matter how hard I tried to do that, there was nothing I could do. I can remember coming to that point in time in my drinking career where my problems continued to pile up on me one after another, and I felt like I was drowning. And I would try to drown those feelings out with alcohol, and the craving would kick in, and I would drink far more alcohol than I needed to be, and then it would create more problems. And it's like that vicious cycle we hear about. But it was such a relief to come in here and have you guys tell me that, you know what, there is something here that will help you. There is a solution. There is a solution that's a power greater than yourself that will restore you to sanity and help you to keep from taking that first drink. Because it's not drink number 12 or drink number 15 that gets me drunk. It's that very first good-sized glug. Because once I've done that, I'm off to the races. You know, sometimes I might have a couple, but invariably most of the time I had way too much. And it's just that allergy. So it makes perfect sense to me. The longer that I'm here and the more I hear each of us talk about that, it makes good sense. It fits my experience as an alcoholic who was out of control. Thanks.
All right, and just to sound on the same page, men and women drink essentially because they like the effect produced by alcohol. The sensation is so elusive that while they admit it is injurious, they cannot after a time differentiate the true from the false. To them, their alcoholic life seems the only normal one. They are restless, irritable, and discontented. Unless they can again experience the sense of ease and comfort which comes at once by taking a few drinks, drinks which they see others taking with impunity. After they have succumbed to the desire once again, as so many do, and the phenomenon of craving develops, they pass through the well-known stages of esprit, emerging remorseful with a firm resolve not to drink again. This is repeated over and over. And unless this person can experience an entire psychic change, there is very little hope of his recovery.
All right. Yeah, there's a lot of meat in these two paragraphs. Yeah, you know, like I was suggesting earlier, I mean, I came in here and I had all these reasons why I drank. And here, you know, the first line that we read is that men and women drink essentially because they like the effect produced by alcohol. And the effect for me was it just made me feel human again, you know. And it made me, all those fears that I lived with and all those insecurities and all those, bitter resentments towards other people, they would all just kind of melt away, you know. And I could just relax and just be one with everyone else in the room, you know. And that's all I ever wanted. That's kind of happiness, just being able to be social with other human beings. And at first that worked, you know. At first that that did work for me, you know, and slowly over time, you know, through many different, I don't know, many different changes in my drinking style and geography and all that, and just aging, the progression of the disease, it stopped. It turned into this sense of ease and comfort, you know, and that suggests that it's not real ease and comfort. You know, and again, here I am at the end of my drinking, and I'm just drunk with my same problems, with those same fears and insecurities and resentments, and I'm just railing those over in my head, man, and getting worked up over it, and that just drives me to drink, and I can't stand to be sober, I can't stand to be without a drink, you know, because then I'm thinking about that stuff, and my mind keeps telling me, hey, man, just... You know, if you just take that drink, man, you won't have to worry about any of this anymore. That's committed in my memory somewhere, and I can't get rid of it. And then I trip off, that phenomenon of craving starts, and I'm gone again. And over and over and again, over again. And I even got to the point in my drinking where I just stopped swearing off. You know, I stopped. I had no more firm resolution not to drink. Clearly, this was a part of my life. This is who I am. I identified with being a drinker. I was just a big, burly, you know, was going to be a jovial, you know, drinker. I was a guy buying rounds for everyone. And this is, you know, kind of my mental image, kind of like a Friar Tuck, man. I'm just riding on the donkey. I got my keg back behind me, and I'm just going to get everyone drunk as I want to be, man, because I want everyone to be happy. And the fact is that wasn't who I was at all. Towards the end of my drinking, I was quite bitter and just quite disillusioned with the world and my life. And I didn't really want to be around other human beings. Mm. Towards the end of my drinking, I was up drinking in the TV room. I couldn't wait until my kids went to sleep so I could just get drunk as I want to and watch the shows that I want to. And I don't have to play tea time with my two toddler girls. And, you know, that was, you know. And so what it suggested, and this keeps happening over and over, and later, of course, we talk about the mental piece, but... It starts talking right here about unless an entire psychic experience, you know, occurs for the drinker, that there's very, very little hope of his recovery. And all that means is that I have to somehow change my mind. And how that happens is there's you know, a convenient little 12-step program later in these pages that help change our mind. It's a way of living, and you don't even see it coming. And just by struggling through it, I get to the other side, and I have this spiritual awakening. I have this change of mind, and I think differently about things, and I react differently to situations. And I find that I don't need that first drink that sets off the physical piece, and that's it. And the only effort necessary is being that we follow a few simple rules. And so that's the steps. Again, I mean, I just find in my experience the steps lead me to everything I need. It leads me to my higher power. It leads me back to the fellowship. It leads me to be service to others. So that's it. And it's simple. I can almost count it on two hands. Just need to kick off shoe and I'm set, man. So I'm going to hand it over to you.
Thank you, Friar Tuck.
Thank you. Yeah. That's right.
The good friar, the jovial friar.
That's right.
Jovial. I like that jovial drink. I saw myself that way for a long time, too.
Yeah.
So I started hitting people and yelling and screaming and cussing.
That gets in the way of that.
Kicking over furniture. What a jerk I was. That's why when I got here, I was a real jerk, not just an alcoholic. I was a jerk. Yeah, you know, when I walk into an AA meeting and if it's an open topic situation and they're like, man, what, someone have a topic? I love to read this paragraph because I think it just sums up the whole thing in a real quick nutshell. You know, this idea that at some point in time in my alcoholic drinking, when I crossed that line and had lost the power of choice, had lost the ability to control, eventually I began to see that it was injurious to me, that it was causing me problems, yet that was not enough to get me to stop. That was never enough to get me to stop, you know. And this idea, I like this other word they use, impunity, right? I had to look that one up. What do you mean impunity? Well, I watched other people around me drinking and they weren't having any problems in life. They'd get up and go to work the next day. They'd meet their responsibilities. You know, I can remember I had a lot of friends that I grew up with in high school and college that drank like I did. But as they got married and had children, they got jobs, and they slowed down on their drinking, and I was speeding up. Yeah. You know, I'm looking around me, and I'm getting into, you know, late 20s, early 30s, and I'm still partying like I'm 18, like I'm 15, really. And it's this thing that this loss of choice that starts with this physical phenomenon of craving, you know, that I begin to take the alcohol into my system. I remember hearing a speaker years ago that said something I thought was so profound at the time. He talked about how when we sit around meetings and we might talk about the insanity of the lives that we led, or the insanity of the things we did when we were drunk. I mean, I can name off just a million things I did that was really insane when I was drinking. But he said for him, he realized that the most insane thing he ever did was knowing what was going to come after taking that first drink. He would continue to do that, expecting something different to happen. You know, knowing that I'm probably most definitely not going to have control. I might wake up in a strange area. I might wake up and wonder where my clothes are, wonder where my car is, wonder where my wallet is. I might wake up with my face glued to the bathroom floor and can't remember how I got there. Yet I would continue to take that first drink. That was the most insane thing I ever did as an alcoholic, taking that first drink, thinking I was still going to have some kind of control. When it had been proven to me time and time and time again, over and over and over. You know, they say alcoholics need repetition. I had a lot of repetition, but it didn't quite sink in for me. You know, it took a lot of pain from that repetition before it sunk in. And, you know, I can remember before the end, there was a time when I might be able to go a little while without drinking. And when I got here, I was a daily drinker, but there was a time before that when I might be able to stay away from it for a week or so. But whenever I did come back to it and say, oh, I'm just going to have one with the fellas, or, oh, you know what, this is an appropriate time for me to have a few, you know, I would go into that well-known stages of a spree where I was going to lose control and I didn't know what was going to happen again. And again, I repeated this over and over again. And you know, this thing about a psychic change, you know, that's come to mean so many different things for me today. But it means that my whole perception and way of seeing life has to completely change. And that scared me. I remember reading the steps on the window shade at a meeting and hearing someone in a meeting say, you know what you've got to change, Larry? You've got to change everything. And I thought, I can't control my drinking. How the hell am I going to change everything? Well, the good news is really all I have to do is bring some willingness to the table to take some action. And the action of the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And that is what will change me. And that is what is going to create the psychic change. And that is what is going to change everything. So I don't have the ability to control my drinking. I don't have the ability to become a good person. I like in the other areas of the book where it says we had moral and philosophical convictions galore. Well, let me tell you, folks, I was a philosophy major in college. When I got here, I knew a lot of stuff. But I couldn't live up to any of it. I couldn't. I wanted to be a good father. I wanted to be a good husband. I wanted to be a good son. I wanted to be a good worker. I couldn't be any of those things as an active alcoholic. I wasn't worth a crap when I got here. But you guys showed me, if I kept taking these simple actions over and over again, it's right here in front of me, simple actions, I'm sorry I'm using it. If I keep taking these simple actions over and over again, which that's exactly what it is, it's 12 steps. If I keep doing these 12 steps, I will change, and I have changed. That's been my experience. I tried everything else. This was the last house on the block for me, as they say. I tried a lot of self-help programs. I tried the psychologist. I paid people money, you know, hired friends to watch me when we went out, you know, all those things. Keep an eye on me, man. Don't let me go past number 5.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, but then when I'm threatening to beat his tail if he doesn't let me have another drink, they back off, you know. I'm glad to be here tonight. This is good. Thanks.
Yeah.
Okay, and moving right along to page 29, XXIX, the paragraph that starts with, I do not hold with those who believe that alcoholism is entirely a problem of mental control. I have had many men who have, for example, worked a period of months on some problem or business deal, which was to be settled on a certain date, favorably to them. They took a drink a day or so prior to the date, and then the phenomenon of craving at once became paramount to all other interests, so that the important appointment was not met. These men were not drinking to escape. They were drinking to overcome a craving beyond their mental control. There are many situations which arise out of this phenomenon of craving, which cause men to make the supreme sacrifice rather than continue to fight.
Yeah. Yeah, there are. I don't know. I think a majority of people in this room understand that this isn't a problem of mental control, you know. I don't know. The other part that I missed, and I'll cheat and bring it into this bit, is that was a normal way of living for me. You know, just years of you know, trying to control it, trying to, maybe I'll just try this, maybe I'll just try that, maybe I'm just not trying hard enough, maybe I need help trying, maybe, you know, and somehow it always came back to me, and whatever power I could either recruit or muster from within, and that was going to be the thing that will just make me like normal people, because I'm a normal person, you know. I was convinced of this, and time again, I just fail myself, and that was just so incredibly normal to me that I don't know. And I thought, and the insanity, you know, when we're talking about restoration of sanity, that also means a lot of things to me. You know, that's one of the insane things. I keep going through that time and time again. And I just learned that it's not up to me and just trying harder. You know, I definitely need a power greater than myself in my life. And again, just like Larry, man, this is a last resort, you know? I'm just out of answers. I can't apologize to you about the God thing anymore because it's the only thing that's worked for me. And, you know, the fortunate thing is we all get our own concept of that. So if you're like me, I had to start with kind of AA as being my higher power. And because I didn't have any kind of mental control over this issue, and I would keep going back to that sense that this is going to bring me some kind of escape from my life. And let's see. Yeah, and I mean, there's many times in my story where I just, you know, drinking became paramount to everything else. And, you know, I was remembering one time, you know, I was in the military, and we went out. I'm way on the other side of the coast in California on an exercise, and it just so happens one of my buddies is stationed out there. So I just kind of, you know, an old drinking buddy. So I just show up on this guy's doorstep because I get I have a few hours off of work. You know, I'm camped out in the desert out there, and I get a few hours off to come into town on the base, and then we got to get bussed back out. And I show up on, first of all, because I'm a considerate guy, I show up on this guy's doorstep, and I'm just like, we're drinking tonight. And he's like, I'm actually going to San Diego tonight. So we can drink a little while, and, you know, whatever. And I work it out where I'm going to stay in his little dorm room, you know, his barracks room. And we have a few drinks. I get good and sloshed. I'm supposed to be getting taken back out to the desert where I have like important duties to fulfill and you know, being a part of this working military structure out there. And I just decide, you know, just it seems like a lot more fun to just drink until this bar closes and then sleep at my, you know, my buddy's barracks room. And that's what I did. And I made everyone from my command look bad. I jeopardized all these people just because drinking became paramount. And I guess the bigger, you know, or another example of that is you know, I came in here for a little while. I learned about this stuff. I worked with a sponsor, and I did a little bit of this stuff for a while, and it got a little good to me. And then, you know, just to show you that peculiar mental twist, you know, we get to the part where it explains there are some heavy drinkers out there that just need a little wake-up call. And that started getting good to me. I'm like, yeah, you know, maybe that's it. Maybe AA is a wake-up call for me. I'm like, thank you very much. You know, I could see how you guys need this, but there's a lot of time taken out of my busy schedule from working the steps and showing up to meetings and talking to strangers. That's kind of uncomfortable. So thank you very much. I'm going to go on vacation. And all it took was one drink, man, and I was gone. I was gone for another 6 months. I just failed to fight it. I just didn't care anymore. You know, thank God. At first it was thank God I made that decision to go back out and start drinking. And by the end of that, I'm just ready to die again because I can't stop the cycle. It's the only way I know, and I have no human way, you know, that I could find to break that. So then I crawl back in here again. I get drugged back in here again, thankfully. So I'm going to pass on that.
I think so.
Yeah.
The mental control thing, to me, that just sounds like willpower. You know, that I've got some kind of power of choice, some kind of willpower that's going to control my drinking. And time and time again, that was proved to me not to be the case. And then I like this thing where they're talking about someone that's got something good on the horizon coming up, you know, some good activity that's going to go well. And so why not stay sober? It's a good reason to be sober and, you know, you've got good things happening. It didn't matter in my life if good things were going on or bad things were going on. I was going to drink, you know, and when I start drinking, good things would become bad things and bad things would get worse. That was really the whole sum of my drinking career. You know, and there was a time at the end where I was drinking to escape, but that wasn't my entire drinking career. There's plenty of fun that had to be had. That I had a great time early in my career drinking, but you know what? There was always excess. It was always excessive. But it was always taking it one step further than it needed to be taken. I heard a speaker over the weekend that said, if he wasn't having enough fun when he was drunk, he had to make it strange. I related to that. He said, if we're not having fun getting drunk, let's get strange. Sounded good.
Adventure time.
The last paragraph there about, there are many situations which arise out of the phenomenon of craving which cause men to make the supreme sacrifice rather than continue to fight. And that's where I was at when I got here. I was completely beaten. I was ready to throw in the towel, not just on my drinking, but on life itself. I was definitely suicidal. I'd had enough. I didn't see any way out. My problems had become astonishingly difficult to solve. I could not figure a way out. I could not figure a way out. All as I saw was pain and misery ahead of me, pain and misery around me. I felt like I had screwed up my life and screwed up everybody's life around me. That was a terrible, terrible place to be. And there was only one solution I saw when I got here, and that was to get rid of me, to get rid of the pain, to take myself out. And thank God one of you all saw that, because that's how I got here. I was 12-step. Someone in my neighborhood who was a recovering alcoholic saw all the signs. That person had never actually seen me take a drink, but saw all the characteristics, all the behaviors, and reached out to me. And it was a woman. And as sick as I was, I thought she was trying to hit on me. I mean, at this point in my drinking career, I'm not even bathing daily. I'm lucky if I take a bath once a week, and I think the neighbor across the street's trying to hit on me. That's how mentally well I was when I got here. But you know what? Thank God she took the time out to see somebody in pain and reach out and help. She was part of the process that saved my life. I truly believe that God put her in my path to save my life. To get me to this program, she got me to go to my first AA meeting. And I didn't stop drinking after my first AA meeting, but she got me there and it planted the seed, and I heard you all talk about hope. And for the first time in a long time for me, that's what it was. I had a little bit of hope, enough that I was willing to go another 24 hours without making the supreme sacrifice. Because I was on the verge. That's where I was at. And it's funny for me to sit here in front of all of you all and talk about that, and I can still remember the feelings. They were horrible. And to think that I survived it because of these 12 steps and because of all of you all walking me through this process, and I'm so grateful, just so grateful just to be sitting here and to be a part of it today. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you, guys. All right, we have our last paragraph on page 30, which is triple X.
Hey, hey.
Sorry.
Let's get strange.
If
you guys aren't having fun.
So now we're getting somewhere.
Okay. The paragraph starts with all these. All these and many others have one symptom in common. They cannot start drinking without developing the phenomenon of craving. This phenomenon, as we have suggested, may be the manifestation of an allergy which differentiates these people and sets them apart as a distinct entity. It has never been, by any treatment with which we are familiar, permanently eradicated. The only relief we have to suggest is entire abstinence.
Yeah, so entire abstinence, you know, that's a little dramatic. I think I came in here, you know, I used to say I came in here to learn to drink like a gentleman. And first of all, I was drug in here, so someone else thought, you know, that I needed this on several occasions. And second of all, I don't think I came here to learn to drink like a gentleman. I think I came here to... for you guys to tell me how I was nothing like you and that maybe you should just go back out and live life the way you were living it. You know, you don't have the problem. We have the problem. This is what it looks like. You're fine. Go back out. Drink. You know, it's fine. Never mind the fact that, you know, you want to quit fighting, you know, that you want to give it all up. So I come in here and, you know, just like... any good alcoholic, new alcoholic, I'm fighting this idea of complete abstinence. And I really hate the little, you know, cliche sayings that we have, but some of them really, you know, really help, man. And that one day at a time, that really saved my life in the beginning, because then my massive brain didn't have to wrap my, you know, all my thoughts around eternity without drinking. You know, after all, that was the only normal way I knew. You know, my whole adult life was about drinking, and it's just I don't know, you know, that's the only way I found that works for me is not drinking and staying sober. And sober means from everything. And then, you know, we get into the mental piece later, and I have to work these steps. I have to be in contact with you guys, constant contact. I need to see that I'm like you guys and not like the next door neighbor who can drink, you know, six beers while he's fixing the engine on his jet ski, you know, whatever he's doing, you know, however he's casually drinking. I just can't casually drink. I can't casually drink one. I can't casually drink a six pack. I can't tell you exactly when the phenomenon of craving kicks in. I just know that I can't get away with drinking one or two. And that's just not possible for me. But when I came in here originally, you know, I fought this concept time and time again. And thank God I stuck around long enough, just working a day at a time towards sobriety, that I got a little clarity and I was able to get a little honest with myself, and I was able to see that, you know, there is life without drinking, and it's better than anything I had while I was drinking. And as long as I don't take that first drink and I maintain my spiritual program, working these 12 steps, man, I get to continue to live that way of living a day at a time. So I'm going to pass on that.
Excellent.
Yeah, thank you.
This section here that talks about our allergy, which differentiates us from other people, makes us a distinct entity. You know, when I got here, I didn't want to be a distinct entity. I didn't want to be different than other people. That was the problem. That's probably one of the reasons I started drinking, because I felt different from everybody else. And one of the things that drinking relieved me of was that feeling of alienation from others. That ease and comfort I was looking for was to be a part of, and drinking really gave me that. Drinking gave me a lot of things, but that was one of them. And so when I came in here and you tell me, well, you are different than others, it's like, man, all my fears are true. You know? I am. I'm the loser jerk, you know. But today I see it as a gift. I see my alcoholism as a gift. You know, we were talking about... talking about things that happen in our lives and whether they're good or bad. And the same speaker I quoted a minute ago, he said, you know, I'm not qualified to judge what's good and bad in my life. And I so agree with that, because the things that I may see in the moment that are just so horribly awful sometimes catapult me into the greatest thing in the world. And I look at AA, I look at my bottle. It was a horrible time in my life. It's horrible pain. But it catapulted me into this program and a whole new spiritual way of life that I never could have imagined. You know, so I'm grateful. I still regret the hurt that I caused and the harm I caused others. But my own personal pain, it was worth it. It was worth it to get here, to have this gift. So the fact that I'm a little different than others, I see as a great thing. You know, I see it as an opportunity to that I wouldn't have had. I wouldn't have had if I hadn't been alcoholic. If I hadn't gone through that pain and that misery, I wouldn't have had the opportunity to be here. Because there wouldn't have been any other reason to be here, hanging out with all you losers. Because you know, that's what I thought when I got here, you know. Y'all are the greatest people in my life. It's I'm at a loss for words, so that just means I need to shut up. Thanks. Glad to be here.
All right, that brings us to the end of our reading, so to speak. And at this time, we're going to pass the seventh tradition basket. And the seventh tradition states that every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup, social office, local services, district, area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose, to help the alcoholic who still suffers. The amount of our contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites all groups around the world. And before we get into announcements, I'd like to thank both of you guys for getting up here this evening.
Thank you.
And a lot of that.
Thank you. Good job, man.
Thanks for sharing your experience, strength, and hope. And at this time, are there any AA-related announcements? Does anyone have any?
Yeah. My name is Ashley, an alcoholic.
Hi.
I have raffle tickets for the Gratitude in Action. It's, you buy one ticket, it's $1, and get a hotel room for 2 nights, and 2 tickets for the Shinfront Conference, August 2015.
That's great. Yeah. Any other announcements? Yes, sir.
We have the May 30th through June 1st. Free registration is good through today. It's $20. Tomorrow it turns into $25. Same goes with reserving a hotel room. Discounted rate is good only through today. Tomorrow it goes up like $20-$30 a night. Come see me after the meeting if you want any details on it. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yes.
Everybody around the big fan.
Hey, Danny.
Downtown Young and Sober is having a workshop May 17th. That is a Saturday. It's from 11 to 2. The topic is Seeds of Growth. We're going to have 4 speakers ranging from 1 to 20 years of sobriety to get a little snippet of what sobriety looks like at different stages, time-wise. That is the 17th from 11 to 2. It is a pop-up lunch, so if you bring some food, you can eat. If you don't have anything to bring, come on out anyways, and we'll feed you. And Iran is bringing bacon, so there will be bacon. If you have any questions, see me after the
meeting. Great, thank you. Any other questions?
Sure. This home group, Simple Actions, is doing a big book study on Friday, May the 9th, and Saturday, May the 10th. It will be right here. On Friday, we start at 6:30, and at 6:30 to 9, we're doing steps 1 through 4. On Saturday, we start around 9:15, and it'll run until 2:30 p.m., and we have potluck lunch in the middle. So bring a dish if you wish. And it will be with Christy E. and Sammy G. from Richmond. Thank you.
Are there flyers?
Yes.
There are bright yellow pliers, a huge stack of them, so please grab a few and bring them to other groups if you wish. Thank you.
Any other announcements? Thank you all. Civil Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group, please see one of us after the meeting. Would home group members please raise your hand? Thank you. And newcomers, is there anyone here in their first 30 days of sobriety? We would like to welcome you. If you could please raise your hand.
All right.
Go ahead.
My name's Dan. I'm an
alcoholic. Hey, Dan,
welcome.
Hi,
hey, Deanna, welcome.
Glad you're here. And also, Ms. Evan mentioned our flyers. There's a literature table up here in the front of the room. There's some flyers and other paper literature. The only thing that does have a small cost is the books. If you're interested in the books, just see any one of the home group members. And any of the paper or the flyers, you can take that with you. The sponsorship question. Sponsorship is available, and sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship in AA, a couple of people will be available after the meeting. If you could please raise your hands, Ryan and David.
Oh, no one's taking my stuff.
Ryan and David will be up here at the front table, so if you guys have any questions about sponsorship, please come up and see either one of them. In closing, we'd like to ask the group to thank the panel again for sharing. We really, really thank you. And thanks to all of you who participated. After we clean up this room, all of you are invited and encouraged to join us and continue this conversation on the stuff discussed tonight. We'll have a meeting after meeting at a lovely Mexican restaurant just down the road, Plaza del Sol. All of you guys are welcome. They have a big table for us, so please come out and have some food. And I'm going to volunteer to read the last two paragraphs on page 164.
I'm an alcoholic and addict.
Hey, Casey.
Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will continually disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find, and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit. You will surely meet some of us as you trust the group with a happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
All right.
Thank you.
All right, if all of you would encourage us in the Lord's Prayer.
Dear Lord,
we
are grateful
always forget the connector piece, man.
I know. It's a new experience. Every week.
He says as he answers his phone.
Calling
us.
Judy, would you like to lead us out?
Yeah.
Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen.
Amen.
Oh, have a look out.